All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. All right, so today we begin Kapitel Yud Beis, number one on the sheet. Everyone has a sheet?
I put it on.
L'Mnatzeach HaLashminis Mizmor L'David. So we'll translate some of the words, then we'll leave some of the words for our interpretation a little bit later on. So L'Mnatzeach, we already know, means for the conductor. HaLashminis, a song of David. Hoshia Hashem. Kigamar Chasid, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save us, provide us with salvation, because the righteous, the pious, are gone. Kipasu emunim bibnei adam, for the faithful have vanished from the sons of man. Shav yidabru ishes re'ehu, svas chalakos b'lev alev yidaberu. So one speaks to another with falseness, smooth talk they speak with a double heart. Now what's interesting already about this kapitel is from the beginning it would appear that Yud Beis is part of the chain that started with Yud. In Yud and Yud Aleph, David speaks about the fact that the righteous suffer. Again, we spoke about the idea that perhaps he's referring to national galus, perhaps he's referring to personal trials and tribulations. What's interesting over here is, whereas the first kapitel, well, when I say first, I mean Yud, in kapitel Yud, we spoke about physical suffering. In kapitel Yud Aleph, we speak about theological, spiritual suffering, spiritual persecution. In Yud Beis, it's interesting that David HaMelech begins by discussing the fact that people aren't honest with each other in the way that they talk. He's not speaking about physical suffering, spiritual suffering, but again, Shav Yidabru Ish Esrei Sfas Chalako, smooth speech. People say one thing, but in their heart they mean something else. Yachreis Hashem Kol Tzisei Chalakos Losham Medaberes Kidolos. May the Lord cut off all smooth lips, the tongue that speaks great things. Asher amru lul shonenu nagbir sasenu itanu miadunanu, because people think they could say whatever they want, and there is no judge to ultimately hold them accountable. Mishod aniyim me'en kasev yonim ato akum yomar Hashem ashis b'yesha yafiach lo. So right now I'm just going to use the translation that you have here on the sheet. Because of the plunder of the poor, because of the cry of the needy, now I will rise, the Lord shall say, I will grant them salvation, he shall speak concerning them. Imaros Hashem Amaros Toros, Kesef Sarv Ba'ali La'aretz Mezukak Shivasayim. So David HaMelech contrasts the speech of man with the speech of God. Whereas the speech of man may be smooth. Now smooth is not said as a compliment, right? Smooth is said as a form of deception, a form of trickery. But when it comes to the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the sayings of the Lord are pure sayings, like silver refined, exposed to the earth, clarified sevenfold. Ata Hashem tishmerein, titzrenu min hadar zuli olam. Hashem, guard them, you shall guard him from this generation forever. Saviv rishayim yishalachun. The wicked roam anywhere they want. Kirum zulas zulus livnei adam. When the one who appears basest to the sons of man is elevated. So the kapitel essentially is comprised of three parts. In part one, David HaMelech is once again lamenting the treatment of the righteous at the hands of the wicked. Again, as we just mentioned before, as opposed to in Yud and Yud Aleph, where he speaks about physical persecution, spiritual persecution, here he seems to dwell on the idea that the wicked say one thing to the righteous, the wicked portray themselves in one way, but ultimately in their hearts are dealing a different way. He contrasts then the dubious or insincere speech of man with the speech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whereas the speech of man is insincere, the speech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always sincere. Lastly, he says, he seems to end off in Pasuk Tes in a little bit of a different direction, that is, again, the wicked do whatever they want. The wicked do whatever they want. Savir risham yishalachun. The wicked roam wherever they please. The way we're going to translate these words right now is kirum zulas livnei adam. Kirum means like roam, which represents heights. Zulus is zol, cheap, nothing. Livnei adam. Those who are cheapest, objectively, of mankind, meaning those who are basest, somehow rise to the highest of heights among men. So David HaMelech, at the end of the kapitel, laments this idea that, again, the wicked always seem to prosper. So, again, now, as I'll mention for the third time, so kapitel Yud Beis seems to be, on the most basic level, a continuation of the chain of the persecution of the righteous at the hands of the wicked. So we see a progression. We go again in kapitel Yud from physical persecution to kapitel Yud Aleph, spiritual, theological persecution, to kapitel Yud Beis, which is actually interesting, because kapitel Yud Beis, David HaMelech is not necessarily referring to any kind of overt persecution. What he's lamenting is the fact that we live in such a deceptive world. That we live among people who tell us one thing, who say one thing. You know, just it's always interesting to draw on current events. You know, it was a little while ago, received virtually no coverage in the press when they had the open mic for Obama and Sarkozy, right? And they were speaking about Netanyahu being such a liar. You know, it's just an amazing thing. These are our allies, right? These are, can you imagine what our enemies say about us, right? These are our friends. But that's what David HaMelech is saying, is it's just amazing that you can't trust people. That's what David is saying. You can't trust, again, we'll have to temper this message just a little bit, but he's saying you can't trust people because they'll tell you one thing to your face, and then they'll feel something and they'll do something totally different. And at the end of the day, the wicked do whatever they want in a totally unchecked manner. What I'd like to draw your attention to, as we begin this, is this Shminis. This Shminis. L'amnatzeach al ha-Shminis mizmor le-David. So if you look at Rashi number 2 comments, al ha-Shminis, kinor shel shmona nimin. So says Rashi that the Shminis refers to an 8-string harp. An 8-string harp. Now, remember, David HaMelech, we know, the first time we're introduced to David, well, not the first time. The first time we're introduced to David, he's shepherding his father's flock. Shmuel HaNavi comes to tell Yishai that one of his sons is going to be king. Yishai summons all of his children. Amazingly enough, Yishai doesn't even think to call in David. In Yishai's eyes, David was the farthest thing from king possibly imaginable. In fact, the only reason he summons David is because Shmuel says, look, we've got a problem. God told me one of your sons is going to be king, and it's not any of the sons you brought before me. Right? Hayish Od, is there another son? And only reluctantly it would appear that Yishai brings in David. And there's good reason for it. There is good reason for it. First of all, because as I think we mentioned the previous year, when the Navi introduces us to David, it introduces us to him with feminine qualities, with beautiful eyes, with beautiful complexion. So the truth is, he didn't necessarily exude this aura of a monarch. Number two, he was musical. He was musical. Again, you know, when you think about a king, say you think about a warrior, you think about, you know, strength, you don't think about beautiful eyes and talented musician. They don't usually go in this. So amazingly enough, we know that David's first introduction into the royal court of the king was through music. Shaul was depressed. Shaul was suffering from clinical depression. And then again, the Malbim says he was suffering from melancholy. He was depressed over what was happening. The only thing that brought him out of his depression was music. So says Rashi, David HaMelech is saying over here, Lam Natseach, if you want to put this particular kapitel to music, Shminis, use the 8-string harp. So the Radak says in number 3 the following idea, Hanira, Ki HaMenatseach, we actually spoke out this Radak in a couple of different shiurim, but let's see it inside. Now, Hanira, Ki HaMenatseach Hu Asher Haya Ala Meshorerim. The Menatseach, which means the conductor, says the Radak, was the individual who was in charge of the Levitic singers. The Menatseach was the conductor of the Levitic choir. Va'al Yidei HaMenatzchim Hayu Ne'emarim HaMizmorim. And the conductors were the ones who ultimately set the kapitel to a musical composition. V'hayu nosnim osan l'menagnim u'l'mishorim v'lo tinza b'shum makom l'mishor u'l'menagin ela l'menatzeach. So ultimately, the menatzeach, the conductor, would give it over to the singers, would give it over to those who played instruments, but never does David HaMelech say l'menagin or l'mishorer. He always says l'menatzeach, giving over the composition, over to the conductor to set it to music. El l'menatzeach, v'yesh shahaya menatzeach akli hanikra neginos, v'yesh akli hanikra shminis. And David HaMelech said much more than menatzeach, conductor, put this to music. David HaMelech actually gave the conductor the particular instrument to use. So sometimes he told them to use the neginos, like l'mnatzeach l'neginos, so that refers to a particular instrument. Others time he set it to a shminis. V'im hakelim hayu ne'emorim hashirim v'hanigunim v'hatihilos kol echad lefi niguno hayidua etzlam. Ki chachma gedola haisa v'hita'orer hanefesh hachachma. So the Radak says so beautifully, so why couldn't they just say the Tehillim? Like we say Tehillim today, why do they have to put it to music? So the Radak says, because everyone knows that first of all, music requires great wisdom, And music awakens the nefesh ha-chachma, awakens the soul of understanding in a way that simple recitation does not. V'hi nechlekes v'nisperes b'chlal ha-chachmos ha-chitzonos. And ultimately, music is part of what we call, the Radak calls, worldly knowledge. Right? That there are certain bodies of knowledge that are not unique to the Jewish people, called Chachmas Hachitzonos, worldly knowledge. And music is one of those, that music to a certain degree is the universal language of mankind. It has the ability to speak to the soul of all man, not just Jewish people. But the Radak says this idea, Lam Natzeach, David gives this over to the conductor, and he tells the conductor, Ala Shminis. For this particular capital, use the 8-string harp. Why put it to music? Because music awakens the soul in a way that simple recitation does not. What's the context of the capital? See, here's what's interesting. I'm going to go a little bit out of order for just a moment. If you take a look at 5 and 6, we'll come back to 4 in just a moment. So, the Malbim and Rashi see Kapitel Yud Beis as an extension of the personal struggles of David HaMelech. So the Malbim writes in number 5, Lam Natzeach, Kineged Baalei Lashon Bizmano, Asher Dabru Asok Neged Hashem, Vidarshu Plaster Bitoraso, Vasher Dibru Lashon Hara Ben Ishlare Ehu. So, interestingly enough, the Malbim says that David HaMelech is addressing this particular Kapitel to people who were living in his time, who were speaking negatively about God, and negatively about the authenticity of Torah. So David HaMelech is blasting them in this particular capital by going ahead and speaking about those who speak one way, but ultimately in their heart believe something else. So David HaMelech, according to the Malbim, is attacking some of the contemporary issues that are occurring during his time, where the people are not giving enough honor, enough kavod to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Torah. Okay? Or he says, Va'asher dibru lashon hara ben ish l'rei ehu. So I guess, you know, this is before the Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation. Right, so David HaMelech has to make his own personal cries against Lashon Hara. See, so it says the Malbim, or it doesn't have to be a theological issue, it could just simply be Lashon Hara. David HaMelech is lamenting the fact that the people are, they're struggling, this constant Lashon Hara anywhere you turn. Okay, so according to the Malbim, David HaMelech is addressing the societal ills that he sees occurring during his monarchy. Rashi takes a little bit differently in number 6. And Rashi says, Kipasu emunim mibnei adam. So Rashi over here is actually quoting from the second pasuk. He says, the pious ones are gone, right? Koshia Hashem, save me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ki gamar chasid, because the pious ones are gone. Pasu emunim mibnei adam. The faithful ones have vanished from among men. So says Rashi number 6, Hakol mishakrim bi. Says Rashi, David HaMelech is saying, everybody lies to me. Umiraglim es hamakomos asher anochi mischade sham. And they give away my hiding places. In which case, by the way, Kapitel Yud Beis would be a natural extension of Kapitel Yud Aleph. Because in Yud Aleph, remember, what was David HaMelech lamenting? David HaMelech was lamenting the fact, if you remember again, according to the Malbim, the context of Kapitel Yud Aleph was David was hiding out with the Zifim, right? And the Zifim gave away his hiding place. So David is saying, I don't even understand. I can't hide anywhere. Here I leave Eretz Yisrael, and now these nations who have nothing to do with me, they're turning me in also. So according to Rashi, Kapitel Yud Beis is a continuation of this. That David HaMelech is saying, I can't trust anyone. I can't trust anyone, because even the people who look like my friends, even the people who I should be able to trust, I can't. In which case, David HaMelech, according to this approach, and he says, I'm sorry, let me just finish it. Umagid and Lashol, hallo David mistater imanu. And anywhere I go, the people are quick to turn me in to Shaul. So what's interesting about this, just as an aside, is you see from David HaMelech's life experiences how traumatic life events also undermine your ability to trust people. What David HaMelech is saying over here is, you know, I can't trust anyone. And remember, if you look at David HaMelech's life, the truth is there were very few people that he actually could put his full trust in. Right? Even in his own family, the whole episode with Goliath, after his own brothers saw that he was anointed as king, and David comes to the battlefront willing to go ahead and battle Goliath, his older brothers shoot him down. His older brothers literally, like, pull the rug out from under him. See, even in his own family, and of course the rebellion with Avshalom, the fact that on his deathbed, as he spoke at last week, Adoniah ben Chagis, So David HaMelech is lamenting the fact that after so much life trauma, I almost have an inability to believe people. That even when people say one thing, my mind is always working, trying to figure out what are they really thinking about within. And the truth is, we know when you have a failed relationship in life and a person that you trusted betrayed you, that erodes your sense of trust in people in general, not just in that individual. That's how people become very cynical. People become very untrusting. So David HaMelech is lamenting this particular dynamic. So according to the Malbim, you have David HaMelech not as much engaging in personal struggle as much as he is engaging in this process of, I can't trust anyone. I can't trust them. Anywhere I go, they turn me in. The Malbim, he's addressing the societal ills of his monarchy. Either people are speaking disparagingly of God, people are speaking disparagingly of Torah, people are just speaking Lashon Hara. If you go back to number 4 for just a moment, now, the common denominator between 5 and 6 is that David HaMelech is lamenting his own personal ongoing struggles, either in his monarchy or as an individual. Other Mefarshim, the Vilna Gaon, prominent among them, understand that this particular kapitel is actually speaking about the Messianic era. And not that it's describing the Messianic era as much as it is David HaMelech pining for the Messianic era. What David HaMelech is saying is like this, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look at the world as it is now. The world as it is now, It's upside down. Dor tapuchosim. It's upside down. The wicked prosper. The righteous suffer. People, even when they say something to your face, you can't necessarily believe anything that they say. Oh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how I yearn for the time where MS will reign. So you have to understand, you know, there's the beautiful, I don't know if it's a Zohar or a Medrash. I think it's a Zohar. I think it's a Medrash. Where when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating the world, so the question was, what value will serve as the foundation stone for the creation of the universe? So, of course, the most natural choice is MS, right? In fact, the Gemara says that Chosama Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu MS, God's signature is MS. There's only one problem, which is the world can't exist with MS. Because you know what MS says? Let me give a good illustration of this. You ever wondered to yourself why the Jews in the desert complained about the man? Right? It's so counterintuitive. Man, it's incredible. No trans fat, right? No carbs, nothing. And mamish, it tastes like whatever you want. Tastes like whatever you want. Almost no preparation. And, I mean, it's a dream come true on so many different levels. So why didn't they like it? So the Maharal, Gur Aryeh, explains that, quoting the Medrash, that the way it worked with the man was the man, we always assume the man fell at your doorstep. Well, the man didn't fall at the doorstep for everyone, right? If you were righteous, the man fell at your doorstep. And if you weren't so righteous, the man fell, you know, a block away. And if you were really having significant problems, the man, you might have to, you know, put your coat on, put your boots on, and go trek for your man. So you can imagine the scene when you got up in the morning. Everybody's going out to bring in the paper and the man, right? And your neighbor is getting their man right there. And you're looking around, right? Where's my man? And you see it off a distance. So you know it's off a distance. Your neighbors see that it's off a distance. It's immediate divine response. That was the existence in the desert. That whatever we did, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, showed us how he felt about that immediately. The people cannot live in that state. They can't, because in that state, that's MS. In a framework of MS, there is no room for human error. Or there's room for human error, but there's immediate divine reciprocity for that human error. So the people could not take living in a constant state, you know, it's like a constant spiritual litmus test. No matter what you do, you know, we often feel that we would like immediate divine feedback. We say that, we don't really want it. Nobody really wants immediate divine feedback, because immediate divine feedback is a very difficult way to live. Because that means as soon as I step out of line, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have to do some course correction. We thrive on the fact that we could do something wrong without immediate divine repercussions, and it's a good thing because it allows us time to get things in order. That's why MS, emes. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to create the world with emes, but ultimately, as the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took emes, v'shlichua artza, and he threw it down out of the celestial court. The Messianic era is an era of emes. Is an era of emes. That's the hallmark of the Messianic. Everything becomes unequivocally and absolutely clear. There's not a question in terms of what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to do it. So what David HaMelech is lamenting over here is the following, according to the Vilna Gaon and others. We'll see that here, Lamnatseach ala Shminis. We'll see how that refers to the Messianic era in just a moment. So David HaMelech is lamenting the fundamental absence of what? Of emes. There's no emes in this world. How is it? And obviously, David HaMelech is speaking in a little bit of hyperbole, right? Because there is emes in this world. There might be an incredible lack of emes as well, but there is some emes. But from David HaMelech's perspective, there is no emes. There's no emes. Anywhere I turn, I can't find truth. How I yearn for the Messianic era, where emes will become the hallmark of human existence. So how does the capital make reference to the Messianic era? It's contained in the first line. Lamnatseach al hashminis. See, up until now, we have defined shminis, according to Rashi, as referring to the eight-string harp. But according to many, shminis actually means what? The eighth. How I yearn for the eighth stage of existence. The number eight represents the Messianic era. Why is that? So I figured, since we're already in Chodesh Kislev, we are allowed to begin learning about Chanukah a little bit. So if we take a look at number four, the Maharal, in his Sefer Ner Mitzvah, where he discusses Chanukah, says something amazing. So he quotes the Gemara, V'lo hayubo lahadlik ela yom echad. There was only enough oil. There was only one cruse of oil enough for one day. V'na'aseneis lahadlik bo ches yomim. And a miracle occurred, and it remained lit for 8 days. Ki elu ches yomim shena'aseneis ba'ar. So the Maharal's premise is, why eight? Like, why did it stay lit for 8 days? So the truth is, we normally back into this reason. We normally give a utilitarian answer. They needed 8 days in order to replenish the oil. So the Maharal says, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. And if it would have only lasted 4 days, okay, they would have lit it when they had more oil. Why eight? So the Maharal says, ki elu ches yomim shenase nesbor. Dover ze bomi ma'alos kodesh hakadoshim. He says, because the number eight is holy of holies. It's kodesh hakadoshim. Shesham lo sholtu hayevane b'ma'alos shiyishlo. Says the Maharal, the miracle of Chanukah is symbolic about the fact that even though the Greeks defiled so much about the physical Beit HaMikdash and defiled so much regarding the soul of the Jewish people, they were not able to touch our essence. V'hu hatzneya shel kohen gadol v'lekach hedliko bo ches yamim ki kodesh kadoshim hu acher shiva v'zeh ashen. We just read more line. V'lama kodesh kadoshim acher shiva ki hanhagos olam hateva hu tachas mispar zayin. He says, because a very logical idea, seven represents nature. Why does seven represent nature? Because seven is the number used for the creation of the physical universe. And even Shabbos, which of course had no physical creation with it, Shabbos is also part of that. What was created on Shabbos? Rest. This is a Chum makes a very important point. We often think that rest is the absence of work. It's not true. This is a Chum says something amazing. He says that the creation of rest means that we as people know when it's time to disengage and recharge. It's an amazing thing. You know how a person could work, and then one day they say to themselves, you know what? I need a break. Where does that come from? Where does that awareness that I need to disengage, recharge in order to re-engage come from? That comes from Shabbos. That Shabbos. For the Shabbos who created the concept of rest on Shabbos for the natural universe as well as for man. So seven represents natural creation. Eight is a step above and beyond. It's lemala min hateva. Therefore, says the Maharal, the whole idea over here is the candles remain lit for 8 days in order to show that there's this piece of Klal Yisrael that's teva, there's this piece that's natural, and that the Greeks can defile. But there's this piece that's lemala min ha-teva, that's above the natural order of things, that the Greeks could not touch. So why am I bringing this down over here? Because according to the Vilna Gaon and others, that's the reference to the Messianic era in this particular capital. Lamnatzech al hashminis is not simply a reference to an eight-stringed harp, but it represents David HaMelech's yearning for that eighth stage of existence. I can't take the lack of MS that exists in the seven-day world that we currently live in. I yearn for the Shminis. I yearn for the Messianic era when once again MS will become the pillar upon which human civilization and the entire universe as a whole is actually built. Okay, so what I'd like to... So what you have over here are essentially... it's really two different approaches as to understanding the context of the particular capital. So we have the Malbim and Rashi, who understand that the capital is referring to, either according to the Malbim, David HaMelech dealing with the theological ills of his monarchy, of dealing with the fact that people are disparaging Hashem, disparaging Torah, that people are speaking Lashon Hara. According to the Rashi, it's continuation, of David HaMelech feeling betrayed by everyone around him, like he spoke about in Capital Yud and Capital Yud Aleph. And according to the Vilna Gaon and others, it's a reference to his yearning, his pining for the Messianic era when he will get all of the MS that is so desperately lacking in the world in which he currently lives. So now I want to draw your attention to the last line of this particular capital. This last line of Saviv Rishoyim Yishalochun Kurum Zulas Livnei Adam. Because remember, as we mention every shir, there are always, every capital is multifaceted. There's what David HaMelech intended it to mean, and how it was reflective of his particular time, of his particular life. But there's also the takeaway message that very often could be different than the original intention of David HaMelech. So, the Gemara picks up on this last pasuk, which we translated as, Kirum Zulas Zulus Livnei Adam, the basis, the Zol, the basis of men, Kirum, is raised to the highest of heights, Livnei Adam, among mankind. So look at number 7. So the Gemara Maseches Brachos makes an amazing statement. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Elazar d'Amri Tarvayu, Kevan shenetzarech Adam lebrios, when a person needs others. When a person needs others. Now, this could be understood in a number of different ways. It could be the Pashat Pshat, the similar approach seen to you when a person needs tzedakah. Right? A person needs others, but the truth is it doesn't have to be limited to charity. It's a reference to times in life where we can't stand on our own two feet. What people want more than anything is what? Independence. Right? And by the way, that's actually a good thing because that's part of the actualization of our Tzelem Elokim. Right? That we have an internal desire to stand on our own, to be our own people, not dependent or not subservient to anyone. Of course, that's ultimately our very undoing as well. Chaim Sholevitz Zechatz Levracha writes in the Sichos Musar, he says that the whole motivation to sin is a flexing of one's muscles. That deep down in man's psyche, man does not want to be told what to do even by God. Even by God. So every once in a while, man finds a way to flex his muscles of self-autonomy. But this idea of independence is very powerful because it also what propels us to be successful. Why do we want to be successful in life? And success, by the way, is a Judaic value, right? Spiritual success, but also material success, right? Acquisition of wealth, not for the sake of acquiring wealth, but acquisition of wealth for the ability to be independent, for the ability to stand on my own, for the ability not to need others, is a Judaic value. So where does this come from? Again, it comes from this Tzelem Elokim idea. So therefore the Gemara says, Kevan shenitzarich Adam lebrios. When a person needs someone else, whether it's because they don't have enough, whether it's tzedakah, or whether it's any other human need that I realize I can't do on my own and I must reach out to others in order to help, panav mishtanos kekrum. His face changes colors like a krum. Okay? Shene'emar, and he quotes our pasuk, kirum zulus livnei adam. Okay, so the obvious question is, my krum. What's a krum? So listen to this. Ki asa revdini amar. Of echad yesh bekrachei hayom. There is a certain type of bird. Krachei hayom means, he literally translates over as the coast town. Krachei hayom means overseas. There's a certain type of bird in the faraway lands, ukrum shemo. And its name is a krum. So what's special about this krum? V'chevan shechama zorachas, when the sun shines down on the krum, mishapech likama gavrin. It turns a number of different colors. So the bird, beautifully, when it reflects the sun's light, turns different colors. So the Gemara says, when a person has to rely on others, their face becomes like a krum. They turn multiple shades. Or in other words, they're very embarrassed. They're very embarrassed. When a person has to go ahead and yield before someone else and say, I can't do it on my own, there is a certain amount of defeat in that statement. Now, by the way, it's the nature of the human condition, right? The Chafetz Chaim says very beautifully that we see in the bracha of borei nefashos rabos vechesronon. We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you created many beautiful neshamos and their deficiencies. I mean, try giving a compliment like that to someone, right? You know, the meal was wonderful, except you should have really put it. It was excellent, don't get me wrong. But you really should have done A, B, C. And we generally try to avoid compliments like that. And when we receive them, they don't exactly leave the best impression. So here, I'm trying to compliment the Ribono Shel Olam. You did a great job. Great job with all those neshamas. And by the way, they're significantly lacking. So what's the pshat? So the Chafetz Chaim says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us like that by design. He created us deficient, that even though, and this is the ultimate anomaly of the human condition, our greatest desire is to stand on our own two feet, unaided and unassisted. And yet, no one can. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates us with that drive, because that drive to stand unaided and by myself is what propels us to be successful. But he also foiled the plan that we can't live by ourselves, because by definition, he makes us need each other, so that if we need each other, by definition, we have a built-in need and a built-in desire and a utilitarian need for community. Interestingly enough, that's why it's a fascinating halacha. Then we'll get back to this fascinating halacha by the what's called the Sudas Havra. When Rachmana Litzlan, a person loses a relative for whom they have to sit Shiva, the first meal that they eat upon returning from the Beis HaKvaros cannot be of their own food. The community must provide them. What if the Avel says it's okay? Even if the Avel says it's okay, it doesn't make a difference. The halacha demands that that food come from the community. So there's a certain utilitarian aspect in that, and that Chazal were concerned that perhaps the Avel won't take care of themselves in the aftermath of traumatic loss, so we force the food there. But on a deeper level, what we're saying to the Avel is just understand, you can't stand on your own. You're going to try to be strong. You're going to try to weather this storm, but you can't. So the halacha forces the community to be a part of the Avel's life, even if the Avel wants to try to go at it all by themselves. Borei nefashos rabos vechesronam. So what the Gemara is saying over here is, person wants to stand on their own. Person wants to be self-sufficient. Now I need help. And you go, whatever the help is, I need help from someone else. The Gemara says, just recognize, panav mishtanos krum. My face will turn the shades of the krum bird. My face will turn multiple shades of color because it's hurtful, it's shameful. For me, there's sometimes a feeling of being defeated when I have to actually stretch out my hand and ask for help for someone else. So what's amazing about this is, what David HaMelech might really be referring to over here is, David HaMelech was a person who had to ask for a lot of help. He had to ask for a lot of help because he was an outlaw. He was enemy number one of the king and of the state. So he had to ask for help from all different kinds of people. So what David HaMelech is doing at the end of this capital is, he's sensitizing us to the feelings of the person who has to reach out. Sometimes when we help someone else, we become so involved in our mitzvah. Look what I'm going to get to. I'm going to get to do an incredible mitzvah of chesed. Very nice, you're going to get the chesed. But just keep in mind that the most important part of that chesed is how you make the recipient of that chesed feel. So David HaMelech is sensitizing the perpetrator of the chesed to the recipient of the chesed. Just know it is the most painful thing in life when you can't stand on your own two feet. And even if you do it benachas, and even if you try to help nicely, just understand, the recipient, his or her face is going to turn colors just like the groom, because it's against the natural order of man to want to accept help from someone else. He's sensitizing us. He's sensitizing us, being in the role of the giver, the bestower of the chesed, to the feelings and to the needs of the person who is the recipient of the chesed. So what's interesting about this is we see a dramatic example of this in an episode in Chayi Sara. So if you take a look at number 9, and this, I'm going to tell you, is going to forever change your conception of the story. Vayomer Hashem, Elokei Adoni Avraham, Hakreino lefanei hayom ba'asei chesed im Adoni Avraham. So this is number 9. So remember, Avram Avinu is old, needs to marry off Yitzchak, doesn't go himself, for whatever the reason. Avram doesn't go himself to find the wife for Yitzchak. He entrusts Eliezer to find the wife for Yitzchak and gives him very simple criteria. Just simply tells him, I want a girl from my family. He doesn't give him any other spiritual criteria. Eliezer, on his own initiative, we actually spoke about this a little bit last week as well. Eliezer, on his own initiative, says that, you know what? We need to find a balas chesed. So what does he say? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm here to do something good for my master. Here I'm standing by the well. Remember, everything in Bereishis, right, always happens around the well. And the maidens of the city, the girls of the city, come out to draw water. And I'm going to go over to a girl, I'm going to ask her, can I drink from your jug? And if she tells me to drink, and I will also water your camels. This is the girl that's for Yitzchak. So the truth is, when we look at this story, we automatically assume, now, what is Eliezer looking for? What is he looking for? What trait? Chesed. What's the problem with that? What's the problem? Okay, how do you know she's kind? Okay, good. More fundamental. Right. So I don't think any of us, if we were stopped to take, ask somebody, somebody asked us for a drink, and we saw they were carrying with them, you know, or leading a flock of camels, I don't think any of us would think that it's incumbent upon us to go ahead and water the entire, camels drink a lot. They drink a lot. He has 10 camels with him. Rivka is one girl, one person. So, is that realistic? I mean, great, she did it. We understand it. But is that really the litmus test for Balas Chesed? And if she would have just said, Eliezer, of course, have a drink, I wouldn't have said anything about the camels. That makes her less of a Balas Chesed? Do we know that Avram Avinu would have, right, when Avram Avinu greets the guests, would he, if they were carrying 10 camels, would he have offered to also make the camels lunch as well? Do we know that? Do we know that that level of chesed existed among anyone? And yet this becomes the bar for Rivka Imenu. So look at number 10. So the Beis Halevi says something amazing. The Beis Halevi writes, listen to this. Yishlomar, da'af agav tahakol hoye bederech nechush v'simin al kol zeh hoye bederech chochma k'tzas. So the Beis Halevi is struggling with our question, which is, Eliezer, what is it that you are looking for from this test? What is it that you, what's the quality that you, because it's not chesed. Because if you're just looking chesed, then it's enough to ask a total stranger for a drink, and she agrees to that request. That's chesed. You're looking for something more. What is it? So look what he says. Rishona, kiratzlenasos osa, b'chalamidos shalo im tovo seina, v'mhein be'eskelo. What Eliezer is looking for is the following. He wants to know, A, does she possess chesed, and does she possess the wisdom to know how to properly implement her chesed? So what does that mean? Rishona, in tovahi b'mazga, litein lishtos li'ish she'ena makeres osa. So first of all, number one, she's going to be approached by a strange man. Right? We would tell our children today. Right? Run fast, run far. Right? So first of all, she's going to be approached, times are different. She's going to be approached by a strange man. And the strange man is going to ask her for a drink. Now the Beis Halevi here makes an amazing diuk. He makes an amazing textual observation. Ubeprat kilo hayosham tzluchis lishov minakad rak shosa mehakad ba'atzmo ukimo shamar hagmiini na ma'at mayim mikadech. So look what Eliezer is asking. So this lady says, look at the words of the pasuk. Hagmi'ini na'amat ma'im mikadech means what? Give me to drink from what? From your jug. So what does that mean? The jug, so you have to imagine the scene. So Rivka comes with a bucket, with a jug. She's drawing water from the jug. What is he asking her to drink from? The jug itself. You see, just before I saw this lady, I just automatically assumed that what's going to happen? He's going to ask her for a drink, and what is she going to do? She's going to scoop out some water from the jug. And she's gonna, no, he's asking to drink from the jug. I want to drink from the receptacle itself. So now the question becomes, are you going to let this strange man drink from the jug? Which of course, is a very awkward situation, as the base lady is going to highlight over here. So if she's going to say no, that indicates she's not a balas chesed. Ubiprat mi odeya im lo yimas hamayim birok shebepiv v'im yesh lo penoki micholas ukidome. So says the Beis Halevi, one second. So can you imagine this Eliezer, who she's never met before in his life, or in her life, right? No idea who this guy is. He's going to put his mouth on the jug. He's going to drink. So, you'll excuse me, does he have a backwash issue, right? Is he sick? Is he drooling everywhere? So, the truth is, it's a very, besides the fact unhygienic, but it's a very uncomfortable type of situation. So look what he says, v'acher kach yira ma ta'ase b'mayim shenososru in tisayim lahabai. So listen to this. So it says basically something amazing. You know what the test was? The test wasn't whether she'll give him some water, because he understood if she's a Baal Chesed, a man's coming from a journey, she's going to give him some water from the jug. But now he put his lips on that jug. He drank that from the jug. What is he looking for in Rivka Imenu? What are you going to do with the rest of the water? What are you going to do with the rest of the water in the jug? So there are a couple of possibilities. In Tisayim Lahabayis, if she's just going to take the rest of the jug home, right, water for the family, Eina Baskola. Then clearly that's not a smart move. Ki ulai be'emes piv enonaki vehitil rok bahakad. Because maybe his mouth wasn't clean, and maybe he said this lady quite explicitly, maybe he salivated into the jug. So to go ahead and bring the jug back home and give the water to your family, that's not the best approach. Okay. Vim himaskeles. Therefore, if she's a thinking girl, she's not going to bring the rest of the water home. All right, so what's the other option? The intishpoch osam. So what happens? She'll give him a drink from the jug, and what's option number two? Spill out the rest of the water. Harihi mevaza also. If she does that, that's terribly humiliating. Because then what she's going to say is, sure, I'd love to do a chesed for you, but if you put your lips anywhere near the water that I'm going to drink, I don't want anything. So she'll spill it out on the ground. Ki bizoyon godol hulo, sheshofeches hamayim yon shosumihem. Because what kind of statement is that? What kind of statement are you making about my personal hygiene standards if I take a sip of water from the jug and suddenly you're pouring the rest of it out? So listen to this. Va'al kein eitza hayyutza. So what's the best approach for Rivka Imenu to take? Shetomar lo, gam gimalecha ashke. So how could she do the chesed, but at the same time preserve the dignity of the visitor, but at the same time not do something silly like take the water back to her family and give it to her family? By offering the animals to drink. V'yeda bazeh ki tovas hamazaki, v'gam ba'alas sichel. V'gam ba'alas derech eretz, shelo lifgoa b'chvod shel adam. This is such an amazing vart. Namely, Eliezer is not looking for Rivka to go ahead and feed and water a flock of camels. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. By the way, that's not the expectation. If somebody, if you ever hear somebody says they want to do that because they think it's an actualization of chesed, tell them they need to get a hobby. Because that's not chesed, that's shtus. That's shtus. There's no obligation for you to go ahead and water someone else's flock of camels. So what is Eliezer looking for? Eliezer doesn't just want a balas chesed. Because being a balas chesed is only one part of the equation. The true Baalas Chesed knows how to do Chesed with Chesed. You have to know how to do something good for someone else, while at the same time thinking about how the actions you're about to do are going to impact upon the individual. So I'm going to ask the girl for a drink, and I'm going to ask her dafka from the jug, from the very receptacle that she uses to bring home water to her family. See if she says, sure. So now I want to see, I'm not worried about her. There are plenty of people who would say, sure. Excuse me. What I'm looking for is, what is she going to do with the rest of the water? If she brings it home, she doesn't have seichel. If she pours it out, she's humiliated me. So Eliezer already knows what the proper approach is. The proper approach is, sure, and allow me to give some water. Not necessary. Allow me to give some water to the flock of camels. So she goes ahead, Eliezer drinks, she gives the rest of the jug of water to the camels. But here's what's amazing about Rivka Imenu. Says the Beis Halevi, Rivka then understands the following. She also understands that if she just goes ahead and pours out that one jug of water for the camels, first of all, what's one little jug of water for the camels? That's a little transparent. That's a little transparent. That's the only reason she's doing that. Is in order to gush, she doesn't have to take this, saliva water back home, you know, to her family. So what does she do? She waters the flock. Not because that's chesed, not because there's some kind of mandate upon Jewish women to go ahead and water stray camels. That's not the pshat, but she does it because in order to maintain the dignity of this visitor, she can't spill out the water, she's not taking it home, but to just spill out this one jug is also very transparent, so she waters the entire flock. This was the godless of Rivka Imenu. Not simply a Baal Chesed, there are plenty of people who are Baal Chesed, but the pinnacle of accomplishment for being a Baal Chesed is to do Chesed with Chesed. And that's what David HaMelech is highlighting over here. David HaMelech is saying is, Kirum Zulus Livnei Adam. That David HaMelech is saying is that you have to be careful that when you do something good, because David HaMelech understands, David HaMelech is on the other end, because there are people who did quote unquote good things for him, but they didn't really do it for David. They did it for their own motivations. They did it because they wanted something in return. And that's why David HaMelech feels so scorned by so many people around him. So David HaMelech, as a person who needed help, as a person who needed to extend his hand, who could not stand on his two feet, sensitizes us, the reader, to just understand. I just want to tell you, as someone who had to take, as someone who had to accept, as someone who could not be self-sufficient, it's demoralizing, it's difficult, it's defeating. So make sure, David HaMelech says, make sure, reader, that if you are ever in the position to help someone else, make sure you understand, A, that just the act of helping itself is panav mishtanos kikrum. Asking for help in and of itself is a very difficult thing. So now that you understand what the person is going to go through, make sure whatever chesed you do for them is done with chesed as well. Make sure whatever you do is done in the way to preserve their dignity and to mitigate the damage, to stem the damage that's caused of having to ask for another's help. One last, yes. Did it occur to Eliezer to take over? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the code of biblical chivalry was. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. It's a good question. He took off the rock, right? And therefore what? I don't know if the pasuk says that he did something. I don't think he did the watering. I think it just says that Vaygalas Avim Al Piyah Be'er, that he took off the rock. I don't think there it says that he did the watering itself. Yes. But even that was limited. Even that was limited because Yonasan at the end of the day was the son of the king. So first of all, David HaMelech, as a good friend, did not want to put Yonasan in moral danger because it wasn't so clear that Shaul wouldn't turn on Yonasan also. So we don't see that much interaction between the two of them after David takes flight. So I think it would appear, I'm sure he could have depended on him, but I think he made a conscious decision not to put him in danger. All right. I'm sorry. Right. bay, put in mortal danger. So just in the last 2 minutes that we have, I'll just share with you one other quick approach with this. So we see that in the midst of all of this context, whether it's messianic context, monarchical context, personal context, David HaMelech also teaches us, again, credible life lessons gleaned from his own life experiences. There's one other piece here, that same Gemara number 11 says, Amr leha hu mirabanan l'rav bibi barabaye. So there's a certain member of the rabbis, etc. Rav Bibi bar Abaye, Va'omri lo Rav Bibi l'Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Mai Kurum Zulus livnei Adam. What is the meaning of this phrase? Kurum Zulus livnei Adam. Listen to this. Eilu dvarim sha'omdim berumo shel olam, u'bnei Adam mezalzelin bahem. This refers to things that stand at the center of the universe, and yet people neglect. People treat with disdain. So just so you have to understand the way they read this pasuk is, kirum, those things roam, those things that stand at a height, at an elevation, those things that are exceptionally important, are so often zulas, are so often so little, so cheap, so nothing, livnei adam. So Rashi says, comments over in this Gemara and says, like, what's an example of that? So Rashi says, Dvarim Shom Nebrumo Sha'olam, Kigon Tfila, Sha'ola Limala. A perfect example is prayer. Prayer, which in and of itself is so exceptionally important, and yet is treated so lightly, so disparagingly by people. So how does this fit into the general context of the kapitel? So it could be what David HaMelech is also saying, and I think this is a profound lesson that we could all relate to, is that sometimes when you live through tumultuous periods in life, you begin to appreciate the little things in ways that people who have a more serene life can't necessarily relate to. So David HaMelech is saying is, look, I've suffered, I've been on the run, I've been persecuted, I've been threatened, I've had all of these different life experiences. And you know what I've come to learn? That sometimes it's the little things in life that are so important. It's the little things in life that have so much meaning. But the irony of ironies is it's the little things of life that people often neglect. So Rashi puts out, Rashi uses tefillah. So why tefillah? How does tefillah fit into the Davidic model? So what is tefillah? Tefillah is a dialogue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the truth is, to have real meaningful tefillah, what do you need? What? Time. What else do you need? Kavana is a manifestation or is an outgrowth of some degree of Yishuv Hadas. Right? You need, I'm going to use the word serenity, but I don't really use serenity. Because I don't mean peace in terms of there's nothing going on in life. But I mean, you have to have the time to be able to focus. So David HaMelech is saying so profound, because remember, much of Tehillim was not necessarily composed when these things were actually happening. They were composed later on in life, but David HaMelech was reflecting back on these things. So David HaMelech is saying, you know, I remember my life before it became tumultuous. And I remember all of the things that were quote-unquote little. And what I wouldn't give to have the time to devote myself to those little things now. Life does not give me those luxuries. But I look around and I see people who do have the time, yet, they take it so lightly. Yet they take it so disparagingly. Yet they neglect putting in the requisite amount of time to really appreciate these moments. So David HaMelech ends off this capital by, yes, number one, sensitizing us to the recipient of our help, recognizing that it's not just enough to do chesed, but you have to do chesed with chesed, and also telling us that sometimes it takes the tumultuous times in life for us to appreciate the little things. The little things that when life is calmer, we take for granted. The little things that when life is calmer, we just don't put all that much attention to. And it's only when life becomes turbulent and we no longer have those little luxuries, we realize how much they truly mean to us. All right, we'll stop over here.